calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination, on the air once again. Welcome to our program here on this, Thursday, the 12th of January, as I recall. Yaron Brook is with us. Mr. Brook, Dr. Brook?
Hi.
Good hey. Great to have you on with us. Yaron Brook is with the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. And Yaron, you're suggesting, let me get this straight. Maybe I'm just like completely missing it. My take on it is that you're suggesting that we should drop a nuclear bomb on Iran.
Oh, no, I've never said that.
Okay.
What I'm suggesting is that since 9/11, since the day after 11, the Institute have been saying that the number one threat to the West today is not Iraq, it wasn't even Afghanistan as a country, but it is Iran and Saudi Arabia. And until these regimes, particularly the Iranian regime, are taken care of, replaced, terrorism will increase, and indeed at this point, we're worried about weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein has. Well, these guys are actually building nuclear weapons. There's no doubt about that. Even the Europeans now seem to concede that fact.
Why do you think that Iran is a threat to the United States?
Well, because it has an ideology that believes in an Islamic empire, believes in the exploitation of Islam.
But we're a long way from them. The Ottoman Empire never extended to North America.
Sure, but they, of course, have actively, they took hostages in 79. They've killed Americans all over the world since then, the Cobra Towers, Marines in Beirut, and so on. They are actively promoting terrorism around the world. They're actively promoting terrorism against Israel, our ally. But even though the Islamic Empire never reached the United States, because the United States didn't exist when they had an empire.
Well, actually, the Ottoman Empire fell with at the end of World War I.
Yeah, but by then it was very weak. I mean, its expansion
continued it was huge.
Through the 17th century, really. And in the 17th century, they had a siege on Vienna. I mean, their goal was to take over the entire, all of Europe. They were not limiting themselves to a particular geographic area. They believe, the Islamic fundamentalists believe in world empire. They want to start with the Middle East. They'd like to turn every country in the Middle East into a fundamentalist country.
But don't you think, Yaron, frankly, I have to say, I think that's for them to work out. Don't you think if we stopped being dependent upon all our, all this oil from the Middle East, we could just walk away from it and say, you guys sort it out for yourselves. We don't need your oil. Good luck. That it would be better for the United States?
Well,
and certainly much better for us than getting involved in a fight with them that might lead to the use of nuclear weapons against them.
Oh, I think that if we could walk away, that would be wonderful. We can't because of oil. But there's another issue, and that is that we cannot allow, in my view, any regime that is clearly hostile to the United States and is threatened to the United States to possess nuclear weapons. And we need to do whatever, because once they do that, they'll develop ballistic missiles, and then New York is a target.
But the fact of the matter is that Iran was liberalizing very rapidly. I mean, you had the two of the three branches of government in Iran were reaching out to the United States quite profoundly during the Clinton administration, even the first year of the Bush administration, until George W. decided to throw them into the axis of evil. And all of a sudden, the people of Iran, who have become very westernized, many of them, threw in with the conservatives.
Well, I think that's a wrong reading of history. I don't think they were truly liberalizing. They had what was called a liberal president, but he had no power because the real power in Iran is held by the supreme leader, who was Ayatollah Khomeini lookalike, still is, Khatami, who's very radical, completely supports the current president's
call. I'm not disagreeing with you on that, but let's define the terms here.
The point is that the way to deal with evil, the way to deal with people who are set on violence and on destruction, is not by being nice to them. It's not by appeasing them. It's by ignoring them. I'm fine with ignoring them, boycotting them, getting away from them, as long as they don't build nuclear weapons. Once they are in the process of building nuclear weapons, it's a threat that needs to be dealt with.
Yeah, I think first of all, by simply saying, oh, they're evil, you're taking millions of people, painting them with a brush that is totally inappropriate, and reducing a very complex situation to the kind of black and white soundbite that I would expect from Fox News, but not from Ayn Rand. I'm surprised, frankly.
The regime and its ideology, secondly, the regime and the ideology that they uphold, to which I don't know how many Iranians support, but a significant number support, is an evil ideology.
And secondly, the force that you're talking about, the power within Iran, is, you know, they have a tripartite form of government, a three-part form of government, much like we do, a legislature, elected an executive. He's actually elected by the legislature there, I believe. And, well, actually, no, the president is elected by the people, and a Supreme Court, as it were. And this Khamenei guy is the head of their, for all practical purposes, Supreme Court. And I find it very weird that the way that in Iran the Ayatollahs and the mullahs were able to thwart liberalism in Iran and thwart the Western-leaning movement and progressive movement in Iran throughout the 70s and 80s and 90s and even today, was by virtue of the fact that the Iranian Constitution says that that court is the final arbiter of the law, just like our Constitution says our Supreme Court is, but it also has a phrase in it that says, and the law must conform with Islam, and these guys in the Supreme Court get to decide what Islam is, and that we now see this exact same or very similar language appearing in the Iraqi Constitution. Now, we went into Iraq, guns a-blazing, bombs a-dropping. We've dropped, you know, thousands of tons of radioactive material on them. We've killed, you know, somewhere between 30,000 and 100,000 innocent civilians who had nothing to do with it. And we've just managed to really, you know, inflame and anger not just all of Iraq, but, you know, the entire region and roughly a billion Muslims in the world. Shouldn't we be working for democratic change by providing a positive example and providing assistance rather than going in belligerently? I mean, if you look at the countries that we have done business with, using your argument that where we have engaged them in a capitalist enterprise, they end up on our side.
Well, they end up on our side when they want to. But let me just address you, Iraq. You're certainly not going to get any disagreement with me about the complete failure of the campaign in Iraq and the fact that, yes, we've created a bigger enemy by moving them to Iran's side. But the way to engage, the reason we can engage China, for example, with capitalism and slowly, hopefully, we can hope moving them towards more freedom and freedom of speech and so on, is because the Chinese government is open to that. The fact is that they have no ideology today in China. Communism is dead, and it's an ideological vacuum, and we can sneak in. There is no ideological vacuum in Iran. Iran is fundamentally, thoroughly Islamic, at least in its dominant culture. Sure, there are a lot of people who reject that, who would like to see change. And you've a little oversimplified or being a little too good to the Iranians in terms of their political structure. They have a supreme leader who is appointed by the previous supreme leader. This supreme leader was appointed basically by Ayatollah Khomeini. He rules everything. And part of the reason the way they've controlled the liberals is by not allowing them to run for election. So, for example, this so-called Supreme Court, I think that's way too generous to call it such a thing, basically chooses who the candidates can run for parliament, and what they do is they eliminate anybody who they disagree with so that the elections are basically among different variations of fundamentalism.
Is this something that's worth more of our young men and women dying over? I mean,
no.
We only have a minute or two left, yeah. And I just wanted to pause this conversation and just ask you a real quick question. Do you're familiar with the 1905 Lochner decision in the Supreme Court? Okay, in 1905, the Supreme Court ruled that it was illegal for New York to have laws that regulated the hours of bankers because it didn't involve interstate commerce. And then there was this 20-year period where the Supreme Court struck down things like minimum wage laws, child labor laws, all these things because they didn't involve interstate commerce.
Sure.
A lot of people, myself included, are concerned that Roberts and Alito want to take us back to that era. What's your take on that?
I doubt it, but I'd love to see it happen. I would have agreed with most of those court decisions at the turn of the century. I think that the court took a radical turn to the left and to a bad turn to the left during the Great Depression under Roosevelt. But I don't think Roberts and Alito are going to do that. I don't think they are true capitalist in that sense. I don't think they really believe in free markets. I don't believe the Christian right generally is truly for freedom. I think they're just for a different form of oppression, not socialism, but more of a strong government, more of a dictatorial president who control things in a different way but still control things.
Interesting. Yaron Brook, the executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. Yaron, thank you so much for being with us today.
I enjoyed it.
Always a fascinating conversation we have.
Good.
It's 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann radio program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting for a Change.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
And who's gonna pay the bill? Who's gonna pay the bill? Not Rush Limbaugh, not George Will, not those chicken hawks on Capitol Hill, not the tax cut billionaires. You know the drill. You're gonna pay the bill.
Indeed, you and me, my friends. $300 more or less for every person living on the planet. All 6 billion of us. That's how much George Bush has committed us to in Iraq. It's incredible when you think about it. I mean, that's enough to wipe out world hunger. It's enough to wipe out polio. It's probably enough to wipe out AIDS. I mean, it's mind-boggling. 22 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartmann radio program. A place where reason is our lifestyle choice. Our telephone number, 866-440-8466. If you want to drop into our live chat room, tomhartmann.com will get you there, and then just click the live chat link. In fact, we've been having a conversation in the chat room about China, and the point was made in my conversation with Yaron Brook about, he's saying, isn't it wonderful China is becoming more and more capitalist? Yes, but they're becoming more and more nationalist. I mean, there was a Chinese general just a few months ago now who said that if we interfered with their right to take back Taiwan, their missing state, that they would hit 100 of our cities with nuclear missiles. And we said nothing. I mean, you know, the U.S. government official position, we got no position. Just please keep making the shoes and textiles and computers and all that stuff there you make for us, because if you don't, then, you know, Walmart's going to be in trouble, and that Walton family gives a lot of money to Republican politicians. So got to take very, very careful thought of this. Oh, my goodness. Joe Biden this morning finally had it. He finally over the top. He was on NBC's morning program with Katie Couric. And he's talking about how, you know, this whole thing is a charade. It's just a charade.
The whole point here is that nominees now, Democrat and Republican nominees, come before the United States Congress and resolve not to let the people know what they think about the important issues. And the real issue is, do the American people have a right to know? This thing about executive privilege. Do the people have a right to know whether or not President Bush is able to go to war in Iran without congressional approval, which his administration argues? That's a pretty basic subject.
That's pretty amazing. You know, the Bush administration is arguing right now that they have the right to attack Iran without getting a resolution of war from Congress. Now, last time I read the Constitution, it said only the Congress could declare war. But Bush says he can do it. He doesn't need any resolution. And so this, of course, is something that will end up before the Supreme Court. And the senators would like to know of Mr. Alito, what do you think about this? You know, this is just separation of powers. And so anyhow, Joe Biden is on with Katie Couric, and she says, but Joe, if he tells the truth, he's going to get in trouble.
Do they have that right? Well, it seems to me a judge should say, well, I think the Constitution says he does or he doesn't, as opposed to saying, well, he's bound by the Constitution.
But at the same time, Senator, can I just interrupt for a second? Because the last time very forthcoming was Robert Bork. And, of course, we all remember what happened to him.
Yeah, as if Bork had some terrible thing happen to him. What happened to him was that Bork was suggesting that we should, again, go back to Lochner, back to 1905. We should go back to saying, you know, there's no minimum wage laws, there's no protections for minorities, that maybe even segregation, you know, that the federal government has no right to enforce anti-segregation laws, blah-de-blah-de-blah, as Joe Biden points out.
Yeah, well, he was forthcoming, and American people didn't agree with his views. He said that there was that states had a right to say that people couldn't use contraceptives. Don't you think the people have a right to know that, Katie? And if they do know that, don't they think they have a right to say, I don't want you on the court, Judge?
So what?
And that's, and so there you go. I mean, you know, Joe Biden just going off saying, you know, wait a minute here. And again, trying to get this out of Alito, the separation of powers. Does the president have the power to just unilaterally invade Iran?
I'd like to try to get quickly to another area here, if I may, that you've been questioned on, this whole notion of unitary executive and the questions referencing Morrison and the dissent of Scalia, et cetera. As I reach and teach the dissent of Scalia, I won't take the time in the interest of time to read his exact language. He has a very scathing and intellectually justifiable, many would argue, criticism of the test employed by the majority in that case is to determine whether separation of powers has been breached. He argues there are very bright lines, that there can be no sharing of any of the power. If it's an executive power, it's an executive power, and it's executive power. He would argue that the alphabet agencies, the FDA, the FCC, the EPA, they are really not constitutionally permissible, because the FDA makes a legislative judgment, it makes a judicial judgment, and it imposes fines and penalties. And so, therefore, it does all three things and is sort of the bastard child.
See, this is the point that I was making yesterday. This is what I was trying to explain when I was sharing with you about the Lochner decision and the decisions that followed Lochner in that period of time from 1905 to 1937, when the Supreme Court kept striking down things like unemployment insurance, minimum wage laws, right to unionize laws, laws against child labor, in the name of separation of powers, in the name of the federal government can only get involved in things if it has to do with interstate commerce. And this is what Joe Biden is talking about. We'll hear the rest of this clip after we come back from this break. It's 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes before the hour. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, helping you win the water cooler wars. By the way, tomorrow, Charles Goyette, one of the finest progressive talk show hosts in the United States, bar none, is going to be filling in for me. He will be hosting this program tomorrow, so don't miss it. It'll be a treat. Charles does a great show. Joe in Provo, Utah, you wanted to comment on Yaron Brook?
Yeah, he's a all take and no give kind of guy. You know, it's just,
what do you mean,
amazing. Well, basically, you know, it's using capitalism as a. This isn't a capitalist country. We use capital to get things done, but it's to me not a capitalist country. I'm a business person. I grew up on small farms, and 80% of the GNP is a small businessman. They're using it basically to take and accumulate as much as they can at the disadvantage of the rest of the people. And, you know, it misses
greed is good, you know, Joe.
Huh?
Greed is good, you know.
Well, greed is good for a handful of people. While, you know, I'm tired of shelters. I'm tired of children being in the streets. I'm tired of this stuff. Mm. You know, I told you before, I'm running a U.S. Senate out here because of that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to start my campaign off at a shelter, and I'm going to tell them that this is about redemption and happiness here, and my happiness is when we get rid of the shelters and the kids have food, water, clothing, and shelter, education, and health care, I'll be a happy camper.
There
I'm not going
to
be a happy camper.
And Joe, for those people who may want to support your campaign, do you have a website?
Yeah, beinghumanparty.com, and I'm going to be hitting the ground February 4th.
Great. Okay, Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Beinghumanparty.com, right?
Yeah, and check out my blog. I support John Murtha, too, when
okay.
He says don't join the military.
Great. Thanks a lot, Joe. Good to hear
Thanks.
From you. I appreciate it. And keep up the good work. I want to just wrap this thing up with Joe Biden. In fact, I want to get back to it because I think this is really the biggest issue of our time, and it's completely flying under the radar screen of the mainstream media and most Americans. Before I do, however, I want to share with you a story that was broken today by editor and publisher magazine. Editor and publisher, E&P, also known as E&P in the industry. You can find them at editorandpublisher.com, the word and spelled out, by the way. Editor and publisher just broke this story. This is the trade publication for the publication business. In other words, this is the magazine that people who write magazines and newspapers read. Here's their article. It's Dateline New York. The Nation magazine will publish tonight an article by former U.S. Representative Elizabeth Holtzman calling for impeachment proceedings against President George W. Bush. Holtzman was a highly visible member of the House Judiciary Committee that voted to impeach President Richard Nixon in 1974. A copy of the article sent to E&P opens, quote, "Finally, it has started. People have begun to speak of impeaching President George W. Bush, not in hushed whispers, but openly, in newspapers, on the Internet, in ordinary conversations, and even in Congress. As a former member of Congress who sat on the House Judiciary Committee during the impeachment proceedings against President Richard Nixon, I believe they are right to do so." After recalling the Nixon proceedings, she comments, "At the time, I hoped that our committee's work would send a strong signal to future presidents that they have to obey the rule of law. I was wrong." Summarizing her case against Bush, she writes, "Like many others, I have been deeply troubled by Bush's breathtaking scorn for our international treaty obligations under the United Nations Charter and the Geneva Conventions. I have also been disturbed by the torture scandals and the violations of U.S. criminal laws at the highest levels of our government they may entail. These concerns have been compounded by growing evidence that the president deliberately misled the country into a war in Iraq. But it wasn't until the most recent revelations that President Bush directed the wiretapping of hundreds, possibly thousands of Americans in violation of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA, and argued that, as commander-in-chief, he has the right, in the interest of national security, to override our country's laws, that I felt the same sinking feeling in my stomach as I did during Watergate." End quote. Former U.S. Representative Elizabeth Holtzman, Congresswoman Elizabeth Holtzman, is going to be publishing an article in the Nation magazine tonight. I don't know, it may even be online now, I'm not sure, suggesting that it's now time to impeach George W. Bush. Back to Joe Biden. Joe Biden is talking to Alito, and he basically says, you know, Scalia has said in this dissent, in this particular case, that the FDA, the EPA, the USDA, that all these agencies, that they're illegal. That they're not constitutional, that there's no, or actually, you know, to, I don't want to mangle Scalia's perspective. What Scalia is saying is not so much that they're not constitutional, that they're unconstitutional, but that they're not constitutional. That is to say, while the Constitution doesn't prohibit them, it doesn't provide for them. And Scalia then goes even a little farther, saying, you know, they involve functions of multiple branches of government. You can't have that. You've got to have this bright line of function. You know, the executive does what the executive does, the judiciary does what the judiciary does, the legislative does what the legislative does. And there were founders and framers who argued this, by the way. And there were others who argued against it. So anyhow, here's Joe Biden talking to Sam Alito about this.
And but most of the majority of the justices say that as long as the power one branch is using does not unduly trench upon the power of the other branch, or it does not substantially affect its ability to carry out its powers, then that's permissible. Which school of thought do you fall into?
Now, where one of the reasons why this is so important is because Bush is claiming that because of this unitary power of the executive branch, he being the head of the executive branch, he has the right to invade Iran without Congress declaring war. He has the power to wiretap people without getting a warrant. He has the power basically to be above the law because he is separate from the law because he is a separate branch of government, and the law comes out of the legislative branch.
Different issues are presented in different factual situations.
That's why I didn't give you a specific issue.
Well, I think you need a specific issue in order to answer it. For example...
Okay, the FDA. Is it constitutional?
I don't know that there are. I don't know whether there are statutory restrictions on the removal of the FDA commissioner.
No, but there are. The FDA does exercise judicial power. It makes judgments. You, drug company A, violated the law.
And I don't know any constitutional objection to that.
Well, Scalia.
I don't know that he would have a constitutional objection to that. My understanding is that he would not have a constitutional objection to their doing that, but I could be mistaken. And I wouldn't want to prejudge any constitutional question that might be presented to me, but I am not aware of a constitutional. If there isn't any limitation on removal, then there obviously isn't a removal issue there. As to the agencies where there are restrictions on the removal of commissioners who are appointed for a term, that issue is dealt with in Humphrey's executor and Weiner and in Morrison, and Morrison was 8-1, and the others are, the other cases would be sort of a fortiori from Morrison.
Very interesting. So essentially, what he's saying here is, maybe these agencies are legitimate, and yet that contradicts his philosophy, which he first put forward back in the 1980s, of the unitary power of the presidency. It's like, where does it begin and where does it end? How do you know? How do you know? By the way, let me just, I pause this program to bring you a special alert. I may be committing a crime in doing this, but I think not. Tom DeLay has been threatening radio and television stations that if they carry this ad put out by OurFuture.org, the Campaign for America's Future, if they carry this ad, he's going to get them. He doesn't deny anything in the ad, but apparently so far 3 television stations have refused to take the ad. So I'll just let you make up your mind about whether you think this ad is something that a TV station should refuse to run. Here we go.
Tom DeLay, indicted for criminal money laundering, pocketed tens of thousands in campaign contributions from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff, 48 trips to golf resorts, 100 flights aboard company jets, 200 nights at world-class resorts and hotels, $1 million from Russian tycoons to allegedly influence his vote. $1 million from Russian tycoons? What else will we uncover about Tom DeLay? It's time for DeLay to resign.
It's time for DeLay to resign. Not just as majority leader, but all together. And then they also, in Ohio, they're running ads about Bob May.
A lavish trip to Scotland to play golf on world-famous courses. Free tickets to sporting events. Meals at upscale restaurants. Tens of thousands of dollars. Sounds like a game show jackpot, doesn't it? Unfortunately, it's what Ohio Congressman Bob May got from indicted lobbyist Jack Abramoff in exchange for political favors. Abramoff pled guilty last week to bribery and other charges in the biggest Washington corruption scandal since Watergate. Court documents and news reports say that in return for the gifts, Bob May agreed to support and pass legislation, place statements into the congressional record, help Abramoff buy a casino, and the list goes on. Who's Bob May really working for? And what are we going to find out next? It's time for Bob May to come clean.
There you go. And this from OurFuture.org, the Campaign for America's Future. And it's time for Bob May to come clean. It's time for Tom DeLay to resign. Well, we'll see how it all shakes out. Karen in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Karen, welcome to the program.
Tom, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling on you because you spent a bit of time in Germany, and I presume speak German rather well. And have
rather poorly, actually, but I speak.
Oh, well, okay. Well, please stumble along, if you will, and perhaps have a sense of German history. And I've come across a link between Alito's stance on unitary leadership and, I hope I can pronounce it, the Führerprinzip.
Führerprinzip, yeah, which is that the Führer stands above the law, basically. It was
This was by the LaRouche outfit, which I kind of, I kind of questioned them, but
once
in a while they're on the mark. And so, do you have a take on it, or what?
Well, I read Schur's Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, and I lived in Germany, but I'm not an expert on all things German. I don't think that we need to hearken back to Germany to look at the doctrine that is being put forward both by Alito and perhaps others, perhaps Roberts as well, and certainly Thomas and Scalia and George W. Bush, that Bush is some kind of all-powerful leader, that he is claiming the powers the kings traditionally held,
mm-hmm.
and that if there's any sort of whether it's a war or we're attacked, if there's any sort of disaster between now and November of this year, that he may even grab more power, and we may even see our elections at risk. I don't think there's any doubt about that, and you know, it does concern me greatly. So
okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call.
Mm-hmm.
Good to hear from you, Karen. And we should be taking a break here any second now. It's in fact, I would say, Zach. Anyway, it's this Nation magazine tonight. It's going to publish an article that by former U.S. Representative Elizabeth Holtzman calling for the impeachment proceedings against President George W. Bush. I mean, this is incredible. Impeachment proceedings against George W. Bush. It is getting out there in the public. It's getting out there in the open. People are starting to talk about this stuff, you know, openly, clearly, unambiguously, I got to salute it. I got to say, hey, you know, that's great. It's time for us to be talking about these kinds of issues, particularly in the impeachment of George W. Bush. Not because I want him replaced by Dick Cheney, but because I want him rendered politically impotent, rendered politically incapable of further destroying this country. For doing further damage to this country, which it certainly seems to me he's been doing. We'll continue with that and your phone calls right after this. Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting is the Tom Hartman radio program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
When I pulled into Pittsburgh about a half past nine, through the tunnel northward to that stunning night skyline, package on the dashboard from an old friend of mine. Well, I had his address, but I didn't know the way.
And welcome back, my friends. 8 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Fact-check, only conservatives have made up their minds on Alito. Senator John Cornyn yesterday complaining that some senators on the Senate Judiciary Committee have already decided to vote against Alito, but not a single senator in the hearings has actually said that. Nobody. Although there are a number who have said that they intend to support him. Lindsey Graham, John Kyle, Sam Brownback, John Cornyn. So, yeah, once again, we've got the conservatives out there spreading disinformation. J.R. In Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, J.R., welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mr. Hartman.
Good morning.
I've noticed that this confirmation hearing is taking a little bit of a twist. It resembles more of a trial than it does a confirmation hearing. The Republicans have acted as if they are defense counsel for Alito, while the Democrats are actually obligation.
JR, you're breaking up really badly. I think, yeah, JR, I'm sorry, you're gone. But, you know, your point is probably well taken. You know, it does seem, in some regard, I don't disagree with you, that in some regards, that it seems that some of the Democrats are pressing Alito in a way that a prosecutor might press a defense or might press a witness, and the Republicans are basically, you know, helping him with his position. And probably that's the way it's always been in these kinds of things. I've only seen a few of them in my life. But, you know, what's wrong with that? In fact, an adversarial process, I think, is the best kind of process if you want to bring out the truth of a situation. Sherice in Paulsbow, Washington?
Oh, yeah, Sherice.
Sherice, I'm sorry.
Hi. Oh, that's okay. I was wondering if you thought it was possible that if George W. was impeached, would that lend us any credibility around the world? Would it improve our you know, the opinion of the world's opinion of the United States? And if
dramatically,
if he was impeached, do you think that would have a trickle down effect to Tony Blair?
Yes, there are calls for the impeachment or the removal from office of Tony Blair, and very loud ones right now in the United Kingdom. And although they've been more effective there at shutting some folks up than they are here, because they don't have a First Amendment there, and it is possible to prohibit political speech in the United Kingdom, and Blair is doing that in some cases, and particularly using official secrets acts and things like that. I think, though, that if there was an effort to impeach George W. Bush, even if it was unsuccessful in the United States, that it would improve our credibility around the world. And I'll tell you, traveling around the world, I was in Germany a couple of weeks ago, and I was in the UK a couple of weeks ago. People around the world are pretty upset. They're pretty upset with America. Charisse, thanks for the call. Phil in Tampa Bay, we got about a minute to go here. Phil, okay. What's up?
You know, a dead or broken clock is right twice a day.
Yeah.
And in this case, when it comes to Iran, I have to say that when you look at the denying of the Holocaust, the anti-Semitism, and now he's going through, doesn't want the Iranians to listen to pop music, you know, equivalent to what the Nazis did in terms of book burning.
I'm not disagreeing that Iran may represent a threat to the United States. What I'm saying is that a lot of that threat came about as a result of bungling by the Bush administration. And the question is now, what do we do about it? And I think that if we try to intervene militarily at this point, we're going to make it worse.
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, had we eliminated Hitler in 1932... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He told you what he was all about when we came out with the book.
Yeah, but
we ignored it.
I really don't think that. I think that there's a huge difference here. Hitler, you know, took Austria. He took the Sudetenland. He took Poland. He was hell bent for leather on conquering all of Europe. I'm not hearing that out of Iran. What I'm hearing out of Iran is, leave us alone. We want to build these weapons to protect ourselves. And I don't mean that in the defense of Iran.
Yeah.
And I agree with you that I think the anti-Semitic...
But he started persecuting the Jews before he invaded Austria.
Oh, sure, absolutely. And that may well be going on in Iran right now as well. This is the problem of trying to reduce any of these things to sound bites, and that's the problem of this administration.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy, my friends. Take no imitations. Tom Hartman here with you. Jeffrey Kleinman is with us. He's with DVDTalk.com and the editor of DVDTalk.com, an online DVD and movie magazine. Jeffrey, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks.
Great to have you here. This is a new feature for us. Most of our listeners have not heard you before, and I just thought it'd be interesting to get into some of the things that are out there in the entertainment field that might also have a social or political context or frame around them. A few that have come out this week that I'd like to get your take on. Hustle and Flow.
Yes, excellent movie. Excellent movie. It deals with the story of a Memphis hustler who looks to music to pull himself out of the quagmire of the Memphis scene, and debuted at Sundance and did really well with critics, but the road to getting made was really rocky.
How so?
Well, basically Craig Brewer is a 35-year-old white guy, and he shopped around the script about...
And this is a film about a black Memphis hustler.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And he had the, you know, he felt very strongly that he wanted to shoot it in Memphis, and he didn't want to have, you know, a 50 Cent or other rap star be the lead, like, you know, like Eminem and 8 Mile.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody wanted to talk to him about it, and basically, you know, they kept shopping around, and finally John Singleton, who's one of the executive producers, said, "Hey, I'm just going to greenlight this film. I'm going to put my own money down, and we're just going to make it."
Now, who's John Singleton?
Well, John Singleton is a director. He's known best for Boys in the Hood. He directed a film that was just out called Four Brothers. And, you know, he's just a prominent director who really took matters in his own hands, took a lot of risk to get this film made, and it really paid off.
Do you think it's a great movie?
I think it was really one of the year's best. I think it's really a kind of a tired story to hear, you know, the person, you know, using rap to get out of a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
But Craig Brewer reinvents this genre and really, you know, connects with the human story here and the people And it's just incredible. It's an incredible movie.
The movie Hustle and Flow is the movie that we're talking about. And to what extent is this, you know, it seems, correct me if I'm wrong in my perception of this. Let me start at this point. It seems that there are movies that are made, and this is just based on the trailers that I see, because I frankly don't see probably more than, you know, every 2 or 3 months I'll see a movie. I mean, maybe 4 or 5 movies a year. I'm not a big movie watcher. Mm-hmm. But it seems from the trailers that I'm seeing that there are movies that are made specifically targeting African-American audiences. There are movies that are made that are, quote, general release, but they're very much not targeting African-American audiences.
Right.
And then there are movies that seem to try to appeal to both. And I'm not talking about just, like, you know, gratuitously tossing, you know, a black guy into a scene or something like that. But I mean, what is the reality of that situation out there in the movie making world?
Well, I think you do have you know, a whole class of genre which they label urban entertainment, which are films specifically geared towards a black audience. The nice thing, you know, when we're talking about Hustle and Flow is, you know, there are directors and creators out there that realize that, you know, some stories are universal. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, Latino, Asian, whatever. There's a humanistic story out there that we all share. And I think those are the films that tend to really cross boundaries. Unfortunately, I mean, you know, the quality of a lot of urban entertainment is not great. You know, it's just not, you know, once in a while you'll have a breakout hit from that genre. But in general, studios are servicing it, but they're not putting their A game on, which is really too bad.
Yeah. So Hustle and Flow, a movie for all audiences.
Absolutely.
The Constant Gardener. This is one I saw. Louise and I went to see this, and the thing that blew me away about The Constant Gardener, aside from the political subtext, which I'd like you to talk about, was the brilliance of the cinematography.
Oh yeah, this is a beautiful film.
I thought this was just one of the most well-shot pieces of film that I had seen in years. So
yeah,
tell us about The Constant Gardener.
Yeah, Constant Gardener is this, you know, it's based on a Jean Le Carré book. So you've got the thriller on it, which is nice because there's this level of subversiveness in that, you know, you've got this great big Hollywood thriller and, you know, it's kind of got the subtext about pharmaceuticals, you know, experimenting on people and, you know, not so great practices in Africa. At the key here is Rachel Weisz and Ralph Fiennes, who give just two standout performances with a lot of heart. You know, in a film that does kind of weave a tangled web of intrigue, and as you untangle it, really does bring to light some serious social issues about AIDS in Africa and pharmaceutical companies.
And in fact, we're finding in the news now here that pharmaceutical companies are not just testing drugs in Africa and doing so in ways that would be illegal in other parts of the world, but they're actually starting to, or pushing to have the legal right and authority to do these kinds of things in the United States.
Yeah, it's really scary. It's really, really scary. And sometimes, you know, one of the things that I love about movies is that they can really be templates for discussing and exploring, you know, real significantly social issues. And, you know, The Constant Gardener works as a film and it's very entertaining, but yeah, it does, after you watch it, you can go, okay, well, you know, where are the boundaries for pharmaceutical companies? And is Africa altruism, or is there something more going on there when they're shipping drugs out there? And at least, you know, this is fiction, but, you know, the Constant Gardener is fiction. It was based on a book. But, again, I think some of the issues are real and worth exploring.
Well, and it also raises the whole issue of pharmaceutical companies covering up things that they know to be true.
Yes.
And you know, as we saw with Vioxx, we're talking with Jeffrey Kleinman. He's the editor of DVDtalk.com, the online DVD and movie magazine, DVDtalk.com. And spotlight on the Ironweed Film Club?
Yeah, this is a great new...
I don't know what this is.
Yeah, basically, there's a new company called Ironweed, and they have a DVD subscription service. Basically, you sign up, it's about it's like $15 a month, and each month they send you a socially relevant film and a couple of shorts. In December, that was Wetback, the undocumented documentary, and two shorts, one Terminal Bar, and the other is Where is a Rock. And this is great. I mean, you know, these are films that typically only play in film festivals and don't have the distribution channel to be seen, and yet they're really poignant and important films which are the kind of things you sit around with a couple of friends and watch, and great discussions come out of them.
Hmm. And is there a website? How do you track down the Ironweed Field Film
Club?
They're
at ironweed.com. And the thing about their club is their subscription services is that once the film is out, it's only out for that month. So you really got to, if it looks good, you really got to snag it and jump on board.
Is it one of these kind of things like the old book clubs where once you sign up, you're paying forever until you say no? Or do you say, yes, I want this one? I mean, how does it work?
I think they have both a monthly option and an annual subscription. So, you know, if there's one that you want to get, I think you can just do that one. But so far, they're in their second issue. The January issue is the second DVD that's coming out shortly. And so far, I mean, I think, you know, it's worth my $15 a month. It's something that I definitely would sign up for.
Interesting. Okay. And finally, Sundance Film Festival starts on the 19th.
Definitely.
What do you see coming here?
Wow.
And particularly Al Gore?
Oh, yeah. Al Gore will be at Sundance this year. There's a documentary that follows his tour across the country talking about global warming, and it's called The Inconvenient Truth. Really exciting. When he was here in Portland, Oregon, there were so many people who came out to see him that they had to do the whole presentation twice. And so it's great that this will be available in a documentary format, and will debut at Sundance, but I have a feeling we'll be seeing it picked up and in theaters shortly thereafter.
Do you think that this could be a stepping off point for some sort of presidential bid on Gore's part?
You know, I don't know. I think this is going to really establish him, you know, as a real voice for global warming. And, you know, as we've seen kind of with some of the ex-presidents,
mm-hmm.
you know, after their presidency, some of their relevancy has kind of gone up and they've gotten involved in very, you know, like Jimmy Carter and such.
Yeah.
I actually think Al Gore is going to move in, you know, from my point of view, might be moving as being the voice for global warming and environmentalism. And I think
he is to a large extent, Jeffrey Kleinman. I saw him here in Portland. He came and spoke, and he was mobbed. I mean, he had to do two shows back-to-back because, I mean, there were people pounding on the doors to get in. It was thousands of people.
Yeah.
It was one of the largest venues in the city. And, you know, and he was brilliant. He got up there, and he just did a barn burner speech. And I walked away from that thinking, this guy needs to run for president in 2008.
The question that you ask is, you know, is he more effective if he runs for president or if he becomes the worldwide voice and advocate for paying attention to global warming? You know,
yeah.
it's hard to say, you know. You know.
I'd rather see him as president. I'll just cast my vote now.
I won't disagree with you, but I think it's really fascinating that there's a platform here for the discussion of these issues. And,
yeah.
And he's going to have one of his former running mates at Sundance as well.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, Jeffrey Kleinman, the editor of DVDtalk.com. Jeffrey, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks.
Fascinating conversation. It's 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're gonna break another heart. You're gonna tell another lie.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where reason is our lifestyle choice. And Victoria Jones is with us on the line. Hey, Victoria, welcome to the program. Victoria?
Hi, thank you very much.
What's up in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I'm standing on the second floor of the Hart Senate Office Building, and what went on in room 216 is really the main thing that's happening in Washington, D.C., which is the continuation of the Judge Alito hearings. We are slowly grinding to a halt. This afternoon will be probably incredibly boring. It's a series of judges who are going to testify. This morning was what they call the third round, in which they got 20 minutes, but there was some negotiation, and it was a mixture of Republicans and Democrats, but this was primary Democrats who wanted to have another go and see if they could really get anywhere with Judge Alito.
And are they?
No, not really.
By and large. I find it amazing that over and over and over again, you know, people have been asking him, do you have anything to say about abortion, you know, about Roe v. Wade? Is it settled law? And basically he won't say. That it's
no, he won't say.
And yet,
he,
this is not a headline across the United States. I mean, I saw this as you know, headline in the New York Times. Alito refuses to say Roe v. Wade is settled law. I mean, John Roberts said it was settled law.
Well, that's what I find so very interesting. John Roberts said it was settled law, which, you know, basically says to me John Roberts is unlikely to vote to overturn. This is a guy who's already said it's not in the Constitution and this could be overturned or should be overturned, and he won't say settled law. You know, he's using a phrase which I've forgotten, but which is not quite there. You know, it leaves wiggle room.
Yeah,
and he does that with everything. He leaves wiggle room for him to overturn something.
Yeah, this, and here's Dick Durbin speaking to him, in fact.
Yesterday when you were asked about one man, one vote, you clarified it, said those were my views then, they're not my views now. When Senator Cole asked you about the power and authority of elected branches as opposed to others, no, he said, I want to clarify, that's not my view now. And yet, when we have tried to press you on this critical statement that you made in that application, a statement which was made by you that said the Constitution does not protect the right to an abortion, you've been unwilling to distance yourself and to say that you disagree with it.
He's been unwilling to distance, and his response, essentially, yeah, I'm not going to go there.
Exactly.
And yet this is not a screaming headline. Why? I mean, this was yesterday that this happened. Where's the press?
Well, I mean, there's actually an awful lot of them in there, and they are making notes, and, you know, I don't know whether it's the editors who've decided, because, you know, the big story today was that Mrs. Alito cried.
Right. It's like, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. We've got infotainment here instead of real news.
Yeah, exactly, and we can make the Democrats look really bad, turn Teddy Kennedy into a bully, and let's do that rather than reporting on the substance.
Now, my take on it, I watched that happen, and my take on it was that Lindsey Graham was saying to him, I have quotes from African-American judges talking about what a wonderful man you are. And when he said that, that's when Alito's wife started crying. And I thought it was like tears of joy, you know, like, thank God somebody's finally defending my husband, you know, that kind of thing. Did I miss something?
No, I don't think you did. I just don't think that it's been portrayed that way. The quotation from Lindsey Graham that's most being used is when he asks Alito if he's a closet bigot, and Alito says he's not any kind of a bigot, and Lindsey Graham says, no, I didn't think so.
Right.
So right. That's about it.
But that's not when she started crying. Then he goes on to say, you know, I've got all these marvelous things. Then Lindsey Graham starts to praise him, and that's when she freaks out.
It's so interesting how it's not being reported exactly like that. Now, we are getting the part of the story where she comes back into the room with Alito and she's all smiles.
Right, right.
But it's so fascinating because prior to that, the big story was the fight between Kennedy and Specter, which was a procedural fight.
Right.
About getting documents. It had nothing to do really with substance, but that was the story that people were going with because there were raised voices. I mean, it
right.
really is third grade stuff.
I mean, here we have a guy who is essentially saying that with regard to separation of powers, he's willing to say that the president should have the power to invade Iran without notifying Congress and without discussing it with the American people. I mean, that was the question that I believe it was Durbin specifically asked him, and you know, it was talking about. He's clearly interested in overturning Roe v. Wade. He's siding with John Roberts, I think, in saying that if something doesn't involve interstate commerce, that it doesn't have a legal right to exist, therefore you can do away with all the federal regulatory agencies, FDA, you know, EPA, et cetera, et cetera. And the American people are not getting this story. I'm boggled.
No, they're not. They won't find out about these things unless and until, whichever it is, there are rulings that are not in their favor made.
But the Democrats are saying them. I mean, they're saying them loudly and clearly. I've been playing the clips here on this program, and I'm just, you know, and then I go home and I watch Chris Matthews or something, and it's like, what, did we see the same hearings?
I mean, I think, you know, because, for example, Biden didn't raise his voice and Schumer hasn't shouted, which they don't usually do anyway, it's being seen that they're being tame, that they backed off certain hard questions. Well, I think for them there was a point at which it was clear they weren't going to get an answer, so why go there?
Right, yeah. Yeah, if somebody needs to pull her shoe off and bang it on the table, I mean, people still remember Nikita Khrushchev doing that. Oh, my. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks so much, Victoria, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. It's 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Yes, rolling along your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. George W. Bush, you're not going to believe, well, actually, you are going to believe this. That's the tragedy of it, right? 5 years ago, I could have said it and you wouldn't have believed it, but now, yeah, okay. Here we go. George W. Bush wants to create a new crime, a new category, a new criminal category. It's called disruptor. And a disruptor is a person who can be jailed for the crime of, quote, disruptive behavior, end quote. A little notice, this from BuzzFlash, actually it's quoting the Washington Post today, a little notice provision in the latest version of the Patriot Act will empower Secret Service to charge protesters with a brand new crime of disrupting major events. This would be things like political conventions, the Olympics, a speech that George W. Bush is giving. You can now, you know, if Code Pink now stands up and unveils something or somebody speaks out, you can be arrested and imprisoned for disrupting. Secret Service would also be empowered to charge persons with breaching security and a charge for entering a restricted area, which is, and I'm quoting now, from the law, where the president or other persons protected by the Secret Service is or will be temporarily visiting, end quote. In other words, you damn well better stay in those free speech zones with the barbed wire around them where they heard you, because if you step outside, you can go to prison for being a disruptor. I'm telling you, this guy, if there is reincarnation, and I don't know, but if there is, The similarities in mindset between the third George to rule England, against whom we fought the Revolutionary War, and this third George to rule the United States are mind-boggling. This is just absolutely breathtaking. George W. Bush, and this is, you know, just kind of stuck in there in the new Patriot Act legislation that they're fighting about over in Congress. Once again, nobody bothered to read the law, and it would have passed if the Democrats hadn't slowed it down. It still may. Incredible. Incredible. Do you want to be a disruptor? I mean, the Fourth Amendment is gone. You know, the right to privacy. The Fifth, Sixth, Seventh, and Eighth Amendments are gone. The right to be charged with a crime, to face your accuser, to have an attorney, to know what you're charged with, what the crime is that you're charged with, the right to make bail, the right to stand before a jury of your peers when you're accused. Those are gone. And now the First, and arguably the Second Amendment, that's a whole other discussion, and then now the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law. Dot, dot, dot. Well, no law respecting the, well, I'll just read you the whole thing. No law respecting the an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And if they get a guy like Scalito on the bench who says, okay, that, you know, the Constitution says the right of the people peaceably to assemble. And if you shout out at the president, or if you're wearing a T-shirt that says impeach Bush, that's not being peaceful. That's being disruptive. And disruptors go to prison. Maybe for years. Maybe we'll just take them to the concentration camp in Guantanamo. Have we gone around the edge? I mean, this is getting really spooky. Going to drop into our chat room, say hi, tomhartman.com. We'll get you there. Our telephone number, 866-440-8466. Larry in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Larry, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I'd like to refer you to a topic that you talked about first thing this morning. I posted an article on your nationally syndicated radio show message board under mm-hmm. the topic heading, Iran President Believes He's the New Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you heard the heard about him back in September giving a speech to the UN during which he believed to be bathed in green light. One of his aides told him so. He's distributing a DVD throughout the Iranian Republic that he is the new Messiah, the Mahdi. And that's the 12th Imam.
Yeah.
And according to the article that I dragged,
that wouldn't be Messiah in the Christian context. It would be
the
new Islamic leader. It's really there's really a very significant distinction. But I get your point.
If you you can find this topic under other articles, if you Google Iran president plus UN speech.
There's no doubt in my mind, Larry, that you know there's some very toxic people in Iran.
Yes,
the question.
He is from a very different school than what many of us have been brought up with as far as Iranian leaders go.
Right.
He was apparently a pretty poor person to start with.
Yeah, this is the guy who was mayor of Tehran for a while, right?
As an army member. I believe he was also part of the individuals that were holding our hostages.
Well, that was accused, and he was accused of that, and I believe that that's been adequately refuted, both by their press and by our press. But whether he was or not, I mean, you know, that was a different time and different place. And again, I am not forgiving him for any of these things or excusing him or whatever. This is the guy, he was the mayor of Tehran for a while, too, was he not?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
And he was brought to power because he appealed to the lower class persons, the poor.
Right.
But according to the article, his apocalyptic religious zealotry has received less attention. And
He's been more portrayed as an Hugo Chavez type with Islamic leanings, and you're suggesting that he's more of a theocrat.
Theocrat.
So what do we do about this, Larry?
Well, I think that it bears close attention because he's getting his his technology from China. He's getting his weapons from China.
So are we.
A lot of his nuclear technology from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting protection from those individuals, those countries.
Yeah.
I realize that Russia is looking a bit more askance at his removing the seals from the nuclear.
Now this is a new development, because just a week ago Russia was talking about reprocessing his uranium so that it was all being done outside the country so nobody could accuse him of trying to build a bomb. But the larger issue that you raise, Larry, is the one that I've been talking about in this program for a couple of years, and it's the area where I think that there's a convergence between people like Ron Paul, the so-called extreme right wing in the Congress of the United States and in the United States, and progressives, and that is a concern about the dictatorship of communist China. You know, and the dictatorship of this communist dictatorship that, in my opinion, represents a threat to the United States, not just an economic threat, but potentially a military threat. I spent time in China back in the 80s, and you know, they have some very clear ideas about this century, this 21st century, being the Chinese century. And, you know, they're creating these alignments with Iran. They're creating alignments with Russia, and our power is waning very rapidly. It seems to me that Bush bankrupting the country, we're borrowing $2 billion a day just to keep our government going. We're borrowing $5 to $6 billion a day just to keep buying junk from China, including the stuff we need to make cruise missiles and to make, you know, Aegis category, you know, warships and things, aircraft carriers. We can't even make our weapons. I mean, you know, it's not just China, of course. I mean, our border guards down on the southern border are wearing uniforms made in Mexico, ironically enough. But Iran I see as part of a larger problem, and that is the absolute total bungling of international and multilateral relations by the Bush administration, in part, you know, antagonizing countries in a way that it actually encourages the rise of right-wingers like Khatami and whatnot in Iran. And on the other hand, you know, ignoring some of the very real problems that we may be facing, like China saying to us one day, we're not going to buy any more dollars.
Absolutely, and they've already made that kind of noise in the press of the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, yeah, it was last week. And then, you know, 3 months ago, one of their generals came out and said, if you guys try and stop us from taking Taiwan, we're going to nuke 100 of your cities.
And they built a brand-new submarine right under our nose. We didn't know a thing about it until they posted information on the web.
Yeah.
on the internet.
What I'm seeing here, Larry, is an international realignment of very significant proportions that the Bush administration, with these incredibly clumsy, tragically clumsy attempts, these neocon attempts to remake Iraq, for example, and the incredible failure of what they did in Afghanistan, which has now become the world's narco state, producing 87% of the world's heroin right now, Afghanistan, not just under our noses, but apparently with our supervision.
Chinese, have got to have spies throughout Iraq watching all of our weaknesses
to
pinpoint those.
And Iran and Afghanistan.
And they'd love to have Iran come in and have a proxy war so that they didn't have to become directly involved.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and nobody, to the best of my knowledge, in the American press is talking about this. I mean, you get a few guys out there, from time to time there'll be somebody, William Grider or something in The Nation or Republican Lou Dobbs. I mean, it's interesting. I really don't see this as liberal conservative. I see this as is the Bush administration doing what's right for America or not? And it's very clear to me that they're not. In some huge ways, some very significant ways, and you lay those out, Larry. And I frankly don't have easy answers. I just know that we have some really serious problems we have to face, and our leadership is not up to it. Larry, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Sometimes it's bad when the going gets tough. Yeah, we look in the mirror. Yeah, we wanna give up.
But you can't give up, my friends.
Sometimes we don't even want to try.
But you got to. We got to push through here. Yes, these are tough times. Yes, we have a bizarre administration. Yes, strange things are happening before the United States Senate right now with Sam Scalito. But nonetheless, we need to keep active. And I mean, what you're seeing play out right now before the United States Senate is the results of 30 years of ground up grassroots organizing and activism on the part of conservatives who decided that they were going to take over the Republican Party. And if we want to have any kind of decent future and any kind of decent country for our children, we need to be doing the same thing with taking back the Democratic Party. Berkeley in Sacramento, California, listening on KSAC, Talk City there in Sacramento. Hey, Berkeley, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I'm a big fan. I love the show. All this news is kind of depressing, but when you were talking about Al Gore the previous half hour, it just made me really excited. If you just go back and think, we've already had Clinton Gore, why not Gore Clinton?
Yeah. Al Gore and Hillary?
Absolutely.
Well, I'd vote for him. I have to say, I'm not, as people who listen to the show, as you probably know, I'm not Hillary's biggest fan. I have some concerns, frankly, with some of the ways, basically her involvement with the DLC, but still, if Al Gore was at the top of the ticket, I'd go for it.
Well, he's so passionate about what this country really needs to do and the environment. He's exactly who we need in charge right now. And I mean, I've been talking to my closest friends about Al Gore for the past couple of weeks. It just seems like such the right fit for him to come back from wherever he is to take over the reins. We really need someone like that right now.
It really would. And Gore. Gore is. Have you heard him speak? By the way, has he made its way out to your place?
I haven't seen him live, and I haven't seen him recently. But I do download his bits from the web whenever I possibly can.
Yeah, if you get an opportunity, check it out. It's really worth the time. Berkeley, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Good hearing from you.
Because I think there were millions just like me.
Here's Al Gore,
who genuinely, in spite of whatever partisanship they may have felt prior to that time, genuinely felt like they wanted George W. Bush to lead all of us in America.
He's talking about it right after 9/11.
Wisely and well. And the reason I'm recalling those feelings now is because those are the feelings that were betrayed by this president.
And boy, were they ever.
He played on our fears.
tell them, Al?
He took America. He took America on an ill-conceived foreign adventure, dangerous to our troops, an adventure that was preordained and planned before 9/11 ever took place.
Now, keep in mind, this is from February of 2004, almost 2 years ago, Al Gore saying this. He's coming right out, standing up, speaking out, and saying, George W. Bush let us down. He betrayed this country.
So whether it's the economy, where he said he'd be a moderate, or social policy, where he said he'd be middle of the road, compassionate, or foreign policy and military policy, I will say to the president that it is not a minor matter to take the loyalty and deep patriotic feelings of the American people and trifle with them for purposes that are not in the best traditions of America. And so I say to you in closing, my friends, in the year 2004, the truth shall rise again.
There you go. And I continue to believe that it did. I believe the exit polls that said John Kerry won by 5 million votes. I'm sorry. Call me impolitic. I know that other talk show hosts disagree with me. But I, you know, exit polls, as far as I know, by and large, are never wrong. They certainly aren't in the countries that rely on them all around the world to verify their elections. And exit polls that show that John Kerry won by 5 million votes, I think, are probably accurate. Sheila in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hey, Sheila, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. How are you? I read the other day on BuzzFlash, and this came from Senator Patty Murray, that the IRS is going to be auditing people because of their party affiliation.
Not quite. There's two IRS stories in the news right now. The first one is that the IRS has announced that they are no longer going to be publishing information about who they audit. So, number one, we don't know. In other words, the oversight of the public has vanished. And number two, the IRS admitted that they had hired a private contractor to gather information about people potentially to audit them, presumably like bank records and things that can be compared against, you know, W-2s and whatnot, and that in the process of gathering that information, this private corporation, which raises the question, why are we outsourcing this stuff? But in any case, this private corporation also gathered information about political affiliation. The IRS has now publicly said that was a huge mistake. They disposed of that information. They're not going to do that anymore. But, by the way, in the future, we're not going to tell you who we're auditing, and we're not going to make the process transparent, which causes me to think that we may see the day when people get audited because they're Democrats, just like it was happening under Richard Nixon. I mean, this is one of the things in the second of the three articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon back in, what was it, 74, as I recall, that was listed was his abuse of the Internal Revenue Service. And so it wouldn't surprise me to see it here all over again, Sheila. But that's the story. That's what happened and how it happened. And heaven help us that it happen again. I sure hope it doesn't. Thanks so much for being with us today, my friends. I do appreciate it. Charles Goyette will be filling in for me tomorrow. Be sure and listen in. I'll be back on Monday. Hope you have a great weekend. And remember, activism begins with you. Doesn't happen unless we all get active. Activism begins with you, my friends. Tag, you're it. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, the third and final hour of our show, my friends. Yes, tag, you're it. No, I'm still here. I'm still here. Still going, the Energizer Bunny. France and Spain are ringing alarm bells over the climate, fearing a repeat of last year's drought that sparked deadly forest fires. This is a Reuters article by David Evans. costly crop failures, widespread water rationing in southern Europe?
No, the climate's not changing. There's nothing unusual about it. Everything's just normal.
We're having flooding here in the Pacific Northwest. They're having fires and
well, we're always having strange weather, you know, someplace, sometime.
Yeah. The European Environment Agency, the EEAA, says water shortages and soaring temperatures in southern Europe are becoming the norm, and its climate models suggest much of the continent may start to become drier as deserts advance. The EEA said in its latest Outlook report, across Europe, climate change already appears to be impacting many sectors of societies. They say higher temperatures and more intense droughts are producing a rising trend in the number and severity of forest fires in the Mediterranean. Many scientists say emissions of heat-trapping carbon dioxide from cars, power plants, and factories are building up in the atmosphere, driving up global temperatures. You'll recall last year in Portugal, 18 people died as a result of forest fires. They destroyed 300,000 hectares, 750,000 acres of forest. In Spain, same thing, fires raging across Spain last year. France was rationing water. Thousands of people died in a heat wave in 2003. Dry winter of 2004, 2005, the low rainfall last year. They're looking at some significant changes in weather in Europe right now. And we are here, too, in the United States. And why? Well, you know, probably some of it is natural cycles of weather change. I mean, we had the Dust Bowl of the 30s. You can go back over time and you can see these small variations, but we're looking at a really major variation here. We're looking at a dramatic increase in the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. We're looking it is the beginning of the positive feedback loop. This is the really dangerous thing. You know, the way a thermostat works in your home, it measures the temperature of the room, and the furnace is on, making it warmer, right? And when it reaches, say, on a cold day, and when it reaches a particular temperature, the thermostat says, we've reached that temperature, stop the heat, and it shuts down the furnace. That's called a negative feedback loop. In other words, when it achieves its goal, it turns things off. A positive feedback loop would be where the thermostat turns the furnace, say your target degree, target temperature is 70. Positive feedback loop would be where your furnace turns on when it hits 70 and doesn't turn off. And what happens, it keeps getting warmer and warmer and warmer. You say, well, that wouldn't make any sense. No, it wouldn't. But that's what's happening globally. We have large parts of the planet that are covered with ice, for example. Ice and snow, which are, you know, highly reflective of sunlight and heat radiation. They bounce it back in out into outer space. And yet, as the atmosphere increases in temperature, this ice and snow is melting away. And as it melts away, it reveals sand and dirt and water, all of which are dark in color, relatively speaking, and absorb heat and light, which thus further warms the atmosphere, which thus increases the amount of snow melt, which thus creates more surface areas that absorb heat, and boom, it's called a runaway positive feedback loop. You add that to the fact that this melting then is dumping enormous amounts of fresh water into the salty parts of the North Atlantic, where you've got the Gulf Stream flowing up there, and there's this literally river of water. It's 100 times larger than all the rivers on land combined. River of water that starts in the Pacific, north of Australia. It starts like halfway between Australia and Hawaii, and follows a trench along the seabed down around the southern coast of Africa and up along the coast of South America. Part of it goes by Florida and all that, you know, the Gulf Stream, and then it tracks across the Atlantic, the North Atlantic, and ends up off the coast, north of and off the coast of Great Britain, about 100 miles more or less south of Greenland. And by that time, it's bringing all this heat with it, and it's bringing relatively fresh water, because the Pacific is so much larger than the Atlantic. Water evaporates from the Atlantic, makes it saltier. And so this river of warm water is flowing up into the Atlantic, and it's evaporating water, and it's evaporating heat into the air. And that water and heat into the air is what provides the rain for Europe and the warmth for Europe. It's why parts of Europe that are the same latitude as parts of Alaska and the central parts of Canada that are permafrost are not permafrost because of all this heat from what's called the Great Conveyor Belt. And that water, by the time it hits Greenland, it has become so salty because so much of it has evaporated and so much colder than the water around it that it settles in this giant down-dwelling that you can actually see from outer space. It's like a giant whirlpool. In fact, there's speculation that that's what, you know, in the old days in the maps, they say, here's the edge of the Earth, here's the whirlpools. That's what they were looking at, because certain times of the year it actually cracks the surface a little bit. You float a ship across it and the ship tilts a little bit. And the water currents are, you know, they're going in a circle instead of going left or right. Because you have enough water equal to 100 times all the rivers in the world flowing from the surface of the Atlantic, 100 miles south of Greenland, down to the floor of the Atlantic. And there at the floor of the Atlantic, it travels back out to the Pacific. I'm sorry, in my original example, I said it's following the floor of the Atlantic coming up. It's not. It's along the surface. It's a surface current coming north, carrying warm water and catching and actually acquiring even more warmth as it passes the equator. And then it settles to the floor of the ocean and becomes a ground or a trench, you know, bottom of the Atlantic current going back out to the Pacific. It takes 1,000 years for this whole loop to happen. And there is some concern that this thing could shut down. And if it does, it could throw the entire world's weather out of whack in huge ways and could throw Europe into an ice age. Thus, I'd say it's good news that Whole Foods has now switched to 100% wind power. They're going all green on their electricity. Now, it doesn't mean they're putting up windmills. They're working with power companies and saying, you know, we'll only sell you power. If you can, they buy 458,000 megawatt hours a year. That's megawatt hours, a million hours. So that's 458 trillion hours of watt hours of electricity. And just signed a 2-year contract with Renewable Choice Energy to say, we'll take it. Now, you know, you could say it's a PR stunt. You know, it's costing a little bit more, not enormously more, but. I say good on them. It's a great start, and we need more. And there are actually there's a bunch of companies that are doing this. Kerr Johnson, the Green Power Partnership, says this is as if a city had been rendered green power because of this purchase by Whole Foods. Purchases are up, by the way, 1,000% since 2001. Some of the other companies besides Whole Foods, they bought 458,000 megawatts a year. Johnson & Johnson Company, 295,000 megawatts. DuPont Incorporation, 170,000 megawatts. Starbucks Corp., 150,000 megawatts. IBM, 110,000 megawatts. This is all wind power. Safeway Inc., 78,000 megawatts, and so on. So it's a good start. White Wave Foods, 49,500 megawatts. I think they're the folks who make Silk, right? That's soy drink. I may be wrong, but I think so. Which is made without GMO soybeans. In the chat room, wandering and wondering, he says, Zappa for President, have you ever heard Tom say the left is dead? Well, yeah. I'll say it again. This is the thing that amazes me. And then we'll take your phone calls here after the break. The thing that absolutely amazes me is that you've got these guys on TV, you know, the Chris Matthews types of the world who go, and on the left is, or, you know, this guy's a liberal, And I'm sorry, if you ask the vast majority of Americans, do they want national health care, they'll say yes. Do you want strong Social Security? Yes. Do you want women to have the right to choose? By and large, yes. You can just go right on down the list. The positions that the left in America is espousing are not left. They are mainstream America. The old left, the Communist Party of the United States of America, that believes that the government should acquire by fiat all businesses in America and control all means of supply and distribution and manufacturing. The old left, the real left, is for all practical purposes in this country dead. I know they're still out there. I actually had a guy from CPUSA on the program a couple months ago just to say, you know, what are you guys up to? And, you know, they're adrift. I mean, the McCarthyites killed them off, and then the failure of communism in the Soviet Union certainly didn't help. So, you know, just in response to the chat room, no, that's why I call this program Uncommon Sense in the Radical Middle. And it just makes me crazy when you see conservatives and news folks talk about it as the left.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
So a new man in the White House with a familiar name. Said he had some fresh ideas, but switched now since he came from Texas to Washington.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you in the place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, don't think so. Dr. Skye Leininger is noted author and editor-in-chief of The Natural Pharmacy, the A to Z Guide to Herb-Drug-Vitamin Interaction. He's also the founder, president, and CEO of a rapidly growing Portland company called Health Notes, which provides consumers with health and wellness product and lifestyle information through interactive touchscreen kiosks in grocery stores, pharmacies, and health food stores. You've probably seen them all around the country. Skye, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I am just great. Great to have you here with us. It is the flu season, as far as I can tell. My wife has been in bed for the last couple of days. This seems to be a really ferocious flu that's going around. David Poole, our producer, had it. Mike, one of the guys here at the radio station, literally knocks people down for 2-3 days. They can't even get out of bed.
My daughter's home with it today.
Uh-huh. Okay. So what can people do about this?
Well, the normal
first,
thing.
First of all, before we go any farther, Skye, what are the symptoms of the flu this year?
Well, it's when you've got the flu, you're going to have body aches, you've got a fever, you're going to be tired out, and the thing about the flu is that it hits really quickly. One day you're fine, and the next day you're knocked out. And
right.
And like you say, the same is happening with Louise and with my daughter. It can linger for a couple of days, sometimes weeks. And what you really want to do is you want to fight back, because you can't just get rid of it. What you've got to do is strengthen the body to fight it.
Right. And now I've been, let's talk about preventing it first of all here.
Sure.
I've been taking vitamin C in pretty bizarre quantities. I mean, to the point that my body's starting to rebel, I think. Echinacea extract. I mean, what's your best in avoiding sugar, and what do you do? I've been sleeping with somebody who's deathly ill, and I don't want to get that way, right?
The dietary thing is one of the keys, and that is really every time you have a spoonful of sugar, what you do is you increase the body's need for vitamin C, and you reduce the ability of the body to fight off infections. So that stuff that tastes really good, and I think this is why people get colds and flus right after the holidays, is that you have more than your normal load of sugar during that time. People are stuffing candy at you and cookies and cakes, and it's pretty hard to resist, isn't it?
Well, doesn't that's an interesting theory. I thought that some of it had to do with the fact that migratory birds actually carry these diseases. I mean, everybody's terrified of the H5N1 bird flu, but there's birds passing through, much of the world right now, migrating right now, and are they not carrying the flus that we're seeing?
Well, some of the flus originate with animals, as we know, and we're so concerned now about what we're calling the bird flu, the possibility of it spreading. But as you know, the real epidemic risk and the risk for spreading comes when people spread it from one person to the next.
Right.
And so, regardless of where it starts, and they do tend to start with avian, more birds, but sometimes they start with other animals. But once people have got them, and if it's one that people can serve as the vector or the spreading mechanism for, then they just go from person to person. And you know, we're in theaters, we're in shopping malls. I've been on airplanes the past couple of weeks. And kids,
I'll be on two of them this afternoon.
And you'll be on two this afternoon. And the other thing is that kids get back from the holidays. They've been gone for about 2 weeks. Over the Christmas holidays, they've gone off and seen their cousins and people in other states and their relatives who have these bugs from the Midwest or from the East Coast or from the West Coast, and depending on where they live, they bring them back home. And when they come back home, it takes about a week or 10 days for them to incubate. And what are we on now? We're about the 11th of January. That's why everybody's sick.
Yeah. Okay, so here I am feeling a little not quite as peppy as I usually am, but I don't feel sick. I just feel kind of, you know, and have for a couple of days. Am I fighting this thing off?
Kind of dragging. It sounds like you're fighting it off pretty successfully because you're up and around, but I think you're doing exactly the right thing with the vitamin C. And taking a lot of it and taking it regularly is exactly the right way to do it because the body uses vitamin C in literally hundreds of different interactions. And taking in 100 or 500 milligrams every hour or so, and
yeah,
you can do that with these little fizzy packets. Or
yep, handy. Emergency. Now, we only have a minute left here, Sky. What if somebody's got the flu, what's the remedy? What do they do?
Take the echinacea. Take 300 milligrams of that and take that 2 to 3 times a day. And the other thing that people might not think about is something called elderberry. You can get black elderberry in the health food store in some kind of, usually in a syrup or as an herb. It's good tasting, and it really helps fight the flu symptoms.
Interesting. Now, are we fighting the symptoms, or are we fighting the virus?
Well, what you're doing is you're fighting the symptoms, and then what you're doing is also building up the immune system to fight the virus. And I'm going to give you one other tip that my mom uses. It's something that you can get. It's a homeopathic remedy. It's called oscillococcinum.
Mm-hmm. It's made from goose liver.
It's made from goose liver, and this will fight flu and help build up the system. We don't even know exactly how it works, but it sure does seem to.
Yeah, it's a homeopathic remedy. Been around for about 20 years. It's a relatively recent one. Interesting. Great. Okay. Dr. Sky Leininger, thank you so much, Sky.
Great talking to you, Tom.
Great talking with you, too. Always fascinating to get these insights into all of this. Oh, Sky, website for the work you're doing?
HealthNotes.com tells you about what we're doing.
There you go.
The main thing is retailers.
HealthNotes.com. It's 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to our program, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, where reason and passion go together like Republican presidents and gay hookers. Jeff Gannon jokes, I guess, are getting a little old. Anyhow, a little long in the tooth, as they say. A couple of interesting things in the news. Of course, the Alito hearings going on. Hillary Clinton talking about body armor, corporations paying their fair share. This is an interesting story. If we don't have time to get to it today, we certainly will, you know, as time goes on. But first, you know, I want to take a few of your phone calls here and say hi and see what's going on out there in the world with our listeners. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, 440-THOM. And, of course, if you want to drop by our live chat room, go to tomhartman.com, T-H-O-M, Hartman with two N's, although however you spell it, we'll get you there. And it should work out just fine. Ed in Arlington, Washington. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. Thanks. Last hour, you said you brought up something that just literally made my blood run cold, and that's the provision in the Patriot Act, the new Patriot Act that Bush is calling the disruptor law.
Right.
Is it possible, do you know the exact section number and all that sort of thing that I can cite when I contact my representatives in Washington in order to have them strike this, you know, it's a totalitarian law. That's,
I agree. I don't have it right in front of me. However, if you go to buzzflash.com, there's a link to the Washington Post story about it, and the Washington Post lays it out. So that's where I would start. I'm dealing with it at the level of headline right now because it's just in the last couple hours that this thing came out, and I frankly haven't had a chance to do the second, third, and fourth level research that, you know, the kind of thing that you're doing right now, that really this story deserves. I'm sorry.
See, now, according to this, or this new law, that cut earlier that you played of Al Gore.
Yeah.
He could have been arrested by federal government for disrupting the status quo.
Well, I don't, you know, frankly, I don't think so. I mean, I think that it still allows for people to give a barn burner speech. But if Al Gore was to stand up when George W. Bush was giving a speech and say, come on, George, quit lying, then, yeah, he could spend the next, you know, X years in prison or whatever the law calls for. Again, as I said, I don't know the details of it, but it's bizarre.
Right. What can I do to help get this splashed across the regular media?
Well, it looks like it's already starting to splash. Like I said, go to BuzzFlash.com, find the story in the Washington Post, and read it. And let's start with that. And during the next break here, I'm going to dig a little deeper into it myself. I've been juggling six plates here through most of the show, and trying to get. And David is tracking down some information. I mean, this is a big story, and we really should be on it, and will be.
Oh, it's the biggest story to hit. Period.
Yeah, assuming it is as severe as it sounds from first blush. I mean, I just got my first notification of it was just an hour and a half ago, an email I got from Mark Chrisman Miller, frankly, saying, hey, go look at this.
Right.
And it was like, whoa.
All these kind of laws are strictly up to interpretation, and they're interpreted by these embedded right-wing justices.
There you go.
All over the country.
There you go. Ed, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear
Thanks,
from you.
Tom.
I appreciate it. Bonnie in Burgettstown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Bonnie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, I'd like to recommend a therapy that works for me, a remedy. Every time I start getting post-nasal drip, which is a precursor for me to a sore throat, I gargle with 3% hydrogen peroxide for 10 seconds to 15 seconds, and I spit it out every half hour until the tickling stops.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, is that because most bacteria are anaerobic? They can't stand oxygen, and hydrogen peroxide releases enormous quantities of oxygen?
I don't really understand the chemistry of it. I got the remedy from a natural healer to whom I listened before I switched station to WPTT to listen to you.
Yeah.
And he got his information from other natural healers, and it really originated from the Birdman of Alcatraz.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. You know, my favorite one, this is an old one that I've used for a long time, and somebody is using our computer and our software here. folks in New York, is mixing garlic, equal parts of garlic, honey, and lemon juice. You take the juice of two lemons, and you take the juice of two lemons and one entire bulb of garlic and an equal amount of honey to the liquid and stir them all together and take that stuff. And it's that'll knock out just about anything. You take a tablespoon of that every couple hours. Of course, you smell like crazy. But anyhow, Bonnie, thanks a lot. Yeah,
He recommends one cap of the hydrogen peroxide. It's 3%, the kind that you can just get at the drugstore, to five caps of good water. You ingest that. It has to have a good dilution, the 1-5.
Yeah,
and
you don't want to be drinking
well.
Hydrogen. Yeah, you don't want to be drinking straight hydrogen peroxide.
No. And I'd also like to comment that we had our sex education program defunded in our area because of Katrina. That's the reason that this administration is given. And since the inception of this program in 1989, the pregnancy rate among 15 to 17-year-olds in Washington County, Pennsylvania, where I live, decreased from 30 to 1,000 in 1989 to 14 per thousand in 2002. Isn't that sad?
In other words, more young girls are getting pregnant.
Well, it's just now happened.
Because the sex ed classes have gone away.
This program will not be available. I homeschool my son, as I told you before, and our church has a comprehensive sexual education. But, you know, I want everybody to have good sex education.
Yeah, this is part of life. This is just part of life. Bonnie, thanks so much for calling and raising these issues. I mean, I find it amazing that kids who graduate from high school and don't know how to balance a checkbook. You know, they don't know how to change a diaper. They don't know basic child rearing skills. They don't know basic relationship skills, and certainly they don't know how their body functions. And these are things that eventually, virtually everybody is going to engage in. And they don't know the relative dangers of different alcohol and tobacco. Actually, we're starting to, I guess, get a little better about that. But anyhow, Will in Brea, California. Hey, Will, welcome to the program.
Hey, Truth Teller, how's it going?
Great. What's up?
Oh, well, I wanted to get on to the Alito thing. I'm wondering if any of these people bothered to ask the guy about the Blackwater people in New Orleans that that didn't follow any laws, and the contractors over in Iraq who go by no laws and represent the U.S. somehow or the other.
Well, to the best of my knowledge, nobody has raised that topic, although I have not listened to every single hour of the thing. I'm on the air for at least three of it, and you know, I've been catching it as I can here and there. But I would say, Will, that Alito is pretty much on the record, since he was the guy who came up with the idea back in the 1980s of the unitary power of the president,
right,
that or of the executive branch. He's pretty much on record as saying the president can do pretty much anything he wants. So I doubt he'd have any problem with this. And this, again, is one of the reasons why I think this whole nomination, this guy is so dangerous.
With this and the new Patriot Act or whatever they call this, that we cannot protest at all, being a loud kind of person who likes to go to protest at times, I may be disappearing soon for who knows how long.
Yeah.
Doesn't this lean towards the idea of maybe filling in the blank before the word fascist now?
Yeah. Well, as I've said, I'm willing to use that word right now. I have deep concerns about the direction we're moving, and the merging of corporate and corporate power and state power in ways that suppress individual rights and the constitutional rights. The individual rights that our founders fought and died for horrifies me. Will, thanks a lot for the call. It's good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Dave in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
I am concerned with Alito. I think he's been caught in a couple of lies here. He stated for the record that he didn't recall being a member of this Princeton Cap Club. They reviewed records last night, and they couldn't find him as ever being a member. Yet on his resume during the Reagan administration, he says
he bragged about it. Yeah.
It's integrity. Do we want a justice with that kind of integrity?
I got to say, Dave, you know, let me just, this probably isn't what you want to hear, but the fact that this guy listed this thing on a job application in 1985, it falls in my mind into the category of small lies or small sins, let's say. I'd cut him slack on that. What I'm concerned about is the fact that he's unwilling to take a position with regard to Roe v. Wade, which means that he wants to overturn Roe v. Wade. I'm concerned about the fact that he thinks that the president should have virtually unlimited powers during time of war, and that he's comfortable with the president declaring that the time of war is going to be henceforth now and forevermore, world without end, amen, until the last terrorist is dead. In other words, he's in favor of our having a kingdom here in the United States, which we fought a revolution to overthrow in 1776. That bothers me a whole lot more than the fact that he lied on a resume in 1985.
I agree. I'm just also concerned of his refusal to recuse himself when he said he would on another program. It's just a history. I'm trying to go at it from another angle.
Yeah, and I know some of the Democrats have as well, you know, trying to trip him up on something or like that. I think just laying out his judicial philosophy, just laying out, you know, where he stands on the issues should be enough to horrify most Americans.
That scares the heck out of me.
Yeah, I mean, and frankly, I felt the same way about John Roberts. And you know, time will tell. But I mean, when John Roberts ruled that the Protected Species Act had no legal standing, that we couldn't protect species in the United States because a toad in California is not engaged in interstate commerce, I'm scratching my head, going, "Whoa, this guy has a very different understanding of America than I do." So, anyhow, we'll be back with more of your phone calls after this. It's 45 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman, the place where being progressive never felt so good.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Till the next time, we'll say goodbye. Till the next time, we'll say goodbye.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, there's so much going on. We're going to see, you know, really what we're looking at right now is, at the bottom line, is in what direction is the United States going to go? I mean, what kind of nation are we going to become? Are we going to continue the reforms of the Roosevelt administration, you know, things like Social Security and protecting workers with unemployment insurance, and are we going to move in a direction of a national health care for all and a kinder, gentler, more compassionate nation? Or are we going to simply roll back all those Roosevelt-era reforms and turn America back to 1905, to the way it was when the United States Supreme Court was ruling that even child labor laws and minimum wage laws were unconstitutional? Which is it going to be? Well, I'm telling you, the right is not at all reluctant to tell you their thoughts.
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
And step one in the process, put Alito on the court. Steve in Springfield, Massachusetts. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Well, hi, Tom. How are you doing? I just want to comment on that last caller from California. I can't remember his name. While I agree with you that the most important thing about Alito is his judicial agenda, and that's the most important thing for us to keep in mind, his horrific judicial agenda, I do think that he has something there in saying that he's shown himself now at the hearings to be a person of not great character and low integrity.
Well, or at least somebody who believes that the means justifies the ends, which is even worse.
Well, that's pretty low character in my book. I just think he squirms in the hot seat. He squirms in one question about the concerned alumni of Princeton membership and his recollections about that. And it certainly was, well, I don't know how you would, I mean, was it kind of squirming, his description of his thoughts regarding Roe v. Wade? And it's not just his verbiage, it's his mannerisms and how he looks. So I just think when we're facing these hypocritical right-wingers who are constantly throwing character and integrity in our faces, I think it's very important for all of America to keep that in mind. But I do agree with you that the most important thing is
which direction is this country going to go? And Alito is taking us in a direction that we haven't seen since the Lochner decision in 1905. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate your calling in. Judy in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Judy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on. I was calling to tell your listeners about a program that we're having and invite them to join us. We are knitting today in opposition of Samuel Alito's nomination.
Oh, how cool.
We're using knitting needles for their intended purpose, which is to create garments. We're making scarves for children in need, and we hope we can keep knitting needles just for that. But we're concerned about Alito, and we want to invite people to join us and to knit scarves. They can go on our national website, which is www.ncjw.org, and they can get information on the knit-in and where they can send the scarves.
That's great.
We hope people will knit across. Some people are knitting today across the country. We've got a big rally going on at the state capitol in St. Paul, and we are real concerned about the religious discrimination part of reproductive choice and just Samuel Alito in general on his views on religious liberties.
Well, that's marvelous what you're doing, Judy. Once again, the website is?
It's www.ncjw.org. And it's part of our whole benchmark campaign. We have for about 5 years, we've had a benchmark campaign where people can log on and get actual alerts when there are nominations that we're concerned about. We've only opposed a handful, but most of President Bush's nominations have gone through.
Yeah.
But we have opposed several, and so people can get information about our benchmark campaign on our national website, or they can go on benchmarkcampaign.org.
NCJW.org, and great. Judy, thank you so much for calling. Also, people can call, if you want to call into Congress, if you want to call your senator, you can. The toll-free number is 1-888-355-3588. David in Springdale, Arkansas. Hey, David.
Yes, hi, Tom.
We have about a minute left. What's up?
Oh, a couple issues. We were talking about the influenza and such. There's a product out on the market called Ocean. It's a saline nasal spray.
Mm-hmm.
My personal use of this is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And the ex-leader, ex-head of the CDC came out and says it will kill even the avian flu.
Amazing.
So for $3 a little bottle, it's well worth trying.
Yeah, or just mix some salt and some water.
I think essentially that's what it is.
I mean, that's what people used to do in the old days is, you know, make salt water and snuff it up their nose. And, you know, it sounds kind of grim, but...
Not at all. Not at all. After the results are well worth what little...
Yeah.
And one more issue, Tom, please. You mentioned earlier in a report about the drying of the Spain is burning in France.
Mm-hmm. And the Midwest in the United States?
Yes. To direct some attention to an ex-weatherman by the name of Scott Stevens, who has some very interesting theories on how our weather is being stolen. And then I might opt for the word chemtrails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
part of how this is all happening.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of interesting information. You open a huge bag can of worms there, David. We'll carry that on some other day. But thanks so much to my producer David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Alex Goldmark, and Dan Jacobs at Air America, and today to Zachary. Zachary, what's your last name? Marsh. There you go, Zach Marsh. And I'm forgive my lousy memory here. To Ben and Shelby at White Rose Society and RadioPower.org, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, to you for listening to our program. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.